Let's turn next to a story that we are, well, I suppose you'd have to say a little bit more across than some of our friends elsewhere in the media, but not as across as my guest, Mark Watts, the editor-in-chief of XRO News. It concerns allegations surrounding Leon Britton, who died last Wednesday after a long battle with cancer, but had already been implicated in the cover-up side of the child sex abuse scandal that continues to unravel, implicated because the dossier he was reportedly given by the MP, Geoffrey Dickins, subsequently disappeared. There's been some development on that story, actually, this weekend, but the biggest developments were revealed in the Sunday People by that newspaper and Mark Watts and his colleagues at XRO News, and they include or involve Leon Britton being actually named as an abuser by one of the witnesses we've heard from on this programme, the key witness, Nick, who has been described by police as credible. Mark Watts is with me now. So you knew this, obviously. You knew that Nick, because he was talking to you when he made these accusations. I suppose I have to begin by asking why they didn't come out before Leon Britton died.
The first thing to say about that is that there were very clear legal reasons why we couldn't do that. And the main legal reason was that Leon Britton was, as we revealed at the weekend, under active and very major police investigation into allegations of child sex abuse. And for us to have named him would inevitably have unleashed a torrent of publicity, which would have basically disrupted any prospects of a prosecution. And that is because the prosecutors would have been overly worried and would have used as an excuse claims that it would be impossible to have a fair trial. And that's because of, you know, the position he occupied and the high-profile nature of him. Now, one
which
thing
is distinct. I'm sorry to interrupt, Mark, but that would distinguish him from other very high-profile household names from the world of entertainment.
Let me explain this. So only in this respect. Once a certain stage is reached, then naming is okay. And, you know, so we're all waiting for a property to be raided, for him to be talked to under caution, to be arrested, all of which happened in those other high-profile cases at the point when they were named. And, in fact, in some cases, they still weren't named even at that point. Now, that's why with Britton, it's particularly interesting. When we did the story last year about the rape claim, the claim that he raped a 19-year-old woman, who we called Jane, in 1967, before he was an MP, the police at the time, of course, things have changed a lot since then, but at the time, were avoiding questioning him over those allegations. And the reason they were avoiding questioning him was that they would know that once the question was put to them, they'd have to confirm that they'd done so and his name would be out.
It
was a consequence of the stories that we did that they were forced to question him. The DPP, Alison Saunders, intervened, largely due to Tom Watson writing to her, asking her to do so. So the police did, in the end, follow the police guidelines. There was a big change around, shall we say, in personnel at the police, a different officer put in charge. And they did interview him under caution, and they duly announced that they had done so.
Yes.
And on that specific investigation, he was named. But because that stage, or no comparable stage, had been reached on the allegations of child sex abuse, sexually abusing boys, he wasn't named. And so we could not do so until that stage was reached, because for sure it would have been used as a stick to beat any chance of a fair trial. And I can tell you that, I mean, certainly the police did very much not want him to be named while they were actively investigating. Now, we don't just do what the police say. We also listen to them. And the point is, we completely agreed with that. And really, they didn't have to ask. They didn't have to make the point. It was a view we came to entirely ourselves. And I have to say, we've worked with the Sunday People on this whole story, and that there was no real doubt about how we had to approach it, and they totally agree with us on that one.
Indeed. There are three instances now, aren't there, of him being accused of being present at venues where the alleged abuse of underage boys took place. Three accusations, distinct accusations, in addition to the ongoing, or the rape inquiry that was ongoing before he passed away. And some of them really do beg a belief. The young man who made a complaint in a police interview in 1982 naming Uncle Leon as being present at the Elm Guesthouse in Barnes, which has been at the centre of so many of your inquiries, and then this apparently not being included in the Police interview notes, despite the fact that officers and a social worker saw it. I know a former police officer has come forward to claim that he has seen photographs of Leon Britton entering premises known to be linked to these sort of crimes. And of course, there's another one, isn't there, involving camera surveillance operations on rent boys around King's Cross in North London. Your reservoirs of surprise, Mark Watts, at how the media responds to some of the stuff you've been unearthing must have run dry months ago. You must surely have run out of surprise. But how can the new... Just want to ask you, when you open up, for example, the Daily Mail today and see this being reported as an unfair besmirchment of a dead man's reputation, you must despair.
Not really. We knew full well that would come. What we revealed at the weekend was that the police had a major investigation running for some while, years, and it had really gathered pace since last October, really, since Nick started speaking to the police. They were a major investigation into multiple allegations against Leon Britton of sexually abusing boys over a very long period of time at various locations, including at Dolphin Square, the Colton Club, and Elm Guesthouse. And the legal reasons that I just said that stopped us from publishing his name simply disappeared with his death. So we told our readers all along that we were not naming him for legal reasons, and we were confronted with his death with the stark fact that those legal reasons no longer applied. And we had to weigh up basically when to do it. And on the one hand, you've clearly got the grief of family members and friends, and that's a factor that weighs against, as it were, upsetting them even more. It's clearly very difficult for them, especially for those who had no idea about this side of Britain's life. But on the other hand, you had other factors. The huge public interest that the Met saw fit to run this major investigation into a former Home Secretary who was, as Home Secretary, therefore responsible for the police, for the security service MI5, and for Special Branch. Now, you've just been talking about all these people referring to past failures to investigate. Well, there's the question. Why did they fail to investigate? Why did they fail to investigate somebody who was the Home Secretary and who had oversight, ministerial oversight, of the police, MI5 and Special Branch?
And that leads us back to where so many of our conversations begin, which is, of course, why does the appetite for truth not seem to be shared by people in a better position to provide it than perhaps even you are? And the implicit answer in what you just said is that because even if they're not apologists for paedophiles or guilty themselves, they represent institutions that have dropped the ball in such spectacular fashion that reputations will never recover.
That's right. I mean, this is actually a story that's not about Leon Britton, funnily enough. This is a story about the failure of institutions across the piece. It's not as if he's the only, he's not the only prominent person who was a paedophile. And it's not only prominent people who are paedophiles. Obviously, the vast majority are not. This is a much wider problem, an institutional problem. I've said to you before, it's about all institutions across the country have a part in this, and in some cases, a very large part of it. Now, when we had to decide whether we would name him at this point, as I say, we had to weigh up all those factors, along with the fact that, in fact, there was increasing speculation, from immediately after his death, some of which I can tell you is wrong. There's a lot of false reporting, a lot of false flags being put out for some strange reason. And so it was right, I think, that we set the record straight. Obviously, we are in best position to know what's going on after all those police investigations largely happened as a result of our work. You know, they took off as a result of our work, and indeed the initial Operation Fernbridge into Elm Guesthouse started as a result of actions that we took more than 2 years ago. So in the end, although it was a difficult decision, there was no doubt about it. Of course, we had to name him in the way that we did, as being the subject of this major police investigation by the Met's paedophile unit.
And yet, if he was still alive, we would be conducting this conversation, and if for various reasons his name had emerged, we'd be having this conversation in very different terms. We would be qualifying everything with alleged and accused, and he denies. There is something a little cold, perhaps, about the way we now conduct this conversation, as if his guilt is established, when, of course, it isn't, actually, is it?
No. Well, see, I mean, if you look at what we actually published at the weekend, we don't assert that he was a paedophile. What we do is we spell out what it was that the police were investigating.
Yes.
So there's a sense...
Which is a matter of record.
Which is a matter of fact. This is what they were investigating. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Now, I know the Met has, I know other people have tried to get official confirmation that they were investigating him, and I understand that they have not done so. But, of course, we're in a unique position of knowing what's going on.
Because so, for people who haven't followed things as closely as we have, that is because the witnesses in this case not only trust you implicitly, but also came to the attention of the authorities through your interventions, through your inquiries.
Yes, well, certainly, I suppose the one who's regarded as particularly key, namely Nick. But there are other witnesses as well. Darren, if you remember, he was what we described as the third witness who'd come forward to talk about abuse at Dolphin Square. He had told the police and us about Liam Britton. And of course, there was Jane, and the investigation into her rape claims had somewhat stalled at the point when we ran the story about her claim, without, of course, naming Britton at that point. And that the story that we ran galvanised that investigation. It led them to question Britton under caution because of consequences that flowed from that story.
Useful clarification. What you were reporting at the weekend in the pages of the Sunday People was an account of things that had actually happened with regard to allegations and accusations. I mention that because a couple of people on text and Twitter troubled perhaps by the tone of our conversation. I hope that that's put their mind at rest. Final question, Mark. What's next?
There's a lot more to come. And as I said, it's not just about Liam Britton. I think one thing that's important for everyone also to realise is not only are we reporting what the police were investigating, but specifically on Nick's allegations, they absolutely believe him to be credible. Astonishing though his allegations are, which after all involve three murders, one of which Nick says happened in the room, in front of Liam Britton. The police are on the record as having said that they regard what Nick alleges as very credible.
Mark Watts, Editor-in-Chief of Exaro News, where you should make your way to Sweet if you want to see completely comprehensive accounts of all the subjects we've touched upon somewhat but necessarily briefly in that and previous conversations.